This episode of the Gospel Coalition podcast is sponsored by Baker Books, presenting Love Thy Body by Nancy Piercy, a thoughtful book that answers hard questions about life and sexuality. More information at bakerpublishinggroup.com. This is the Gospel Coalition podcast, where we seek to renew the contemporary church in the ancient gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Colin Hansen. A seminary education is immensely valuable, offering theological preparation, spiritual formation, and wise mentoring. I can't imagine my own ministry without those 3 years at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, and I'm honored today to serve students at Beeson Divinity School as an advisory board member. But I've seen over the years how many recent graduates grow discouraged as new pastors when the realities of their first call don't line up with what they came to expect from assigned readings and classroom discussions. Because some lessons just can't be learned in a classroom. We need help to bridge the gap between seminary training and real life. I met Jeff Robinson more than 5 years ago during his first pastorate, and we immediately began to see the need for ourselves and others to equip pastors for the challenges of leading congregations through seasons of suffering, handling conflict, accepting a call, leaving a church, and more. So it's my honor to welcome my colleague and friend, Jeff Robinson, TGC Senior Editor, to the Gospel Coalition podcast to discuss our new book, 15 Things Seminary Couldn't Teach Me. It's the first of a series of books from the Gospel Coalition that we hope, by God's grace, will make pastors more faithful and effective in discharging their call to the local church. This book, which we've edited and Crossway has published, draws together insights and experiences from many of our mentors and heroes in ministry, including TGC Council members Albert Moeller, Danny Aiken, Harry Reeder, John Onwuchekwa, Vermone Pierre, and Juan Sanchez. Jeff, thank you for serving alongside me in this book and in so many other ways at TGC, and for joining me today on the Gospel Coalition podcast.
Well, it's my pleasure, Colin. Thank you for having me.
Well, Jeff, you have just a fascinating career. Talk to us a little bit about your career path and how it led up to your service in the local church as a pastor.
Well, I think I have a bit of an unusual, I've walked a bit of an unusual path, I think, into ministry. I grew up in church. I was privileged to be raised by godly father and mother, and was in church practically every time the doors were open, but also grew up loving sports. And so my dream was always to play second base for the Cincinnati Reds, but since I proved not to have the talent to take Joe Morgan's place at second base, I decided to become a sports writer in high school. And so I attended journalism school at the University of Georgia in my home state, and then went to work during college as a newspaper journalist, first as a sports writer, and later I worked in news. I wrote about politics and just did a little bit of everything. Served as an editor for newspapers in Georgia, or a reporter, writer, and an editor in Georgia, North Carolina, Tennessee, and later in Kentucky. All in all, I served as a newspaper journalist for about 23 years, and that was including 10 years to help feed the family while I was in seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, where we currently live. Like I said, I wrote about sports and news, got to write about Major League Baseball, which is one of my great passions, and college football, and got to interview a couple of presidents, did lots of high school stuff on Friday nights. So even now, I laugh to my sons at how our vehicle almost wants to turn into a high school game somewhere. Because I did that for so many years, many years. And but I surrendered to ministry at age 30, so a little bit later in life than your typical seminary student, at least students that I encounter today. Spent a couple years preaching down in Georgia and some North Carolina and surrounding areas, and went to seminary at age 32, and stayed there a lot longer than I initially intended. Stayed there about 8 years, took a couple of degrees by God's grace. I had one plan, but God had quite another, and didn't go into my first pastorate until I was 43. I did three previous interim pastorates and did a lot of other Had a lot of other ministry experience in prison ministry, just a lot of different things in the local church. And like I said, I've been deeply involved in the local church virtually my entire life. So I got to the local church at 43, which I'm not sure if that helped me or it was a help or a hindrance to me, but I like to think it was some kind of help. So that's my route to the ministry, a little different than the average, probably typical seminary student that at least I encounter today.
But pretty easily to see why we would be able to click so easily there with that background in sports writing. And you tell us a little bit about some of your academic work, because I think that's just a major gift to us at the Gospel Coalition. Not only that deep experience with publications and with writing and editing, but then also your work as a theologian and as a church historian as well.
Well, like I said, I left my hometown down in Georgia with my dream was to stay in seminary 3 years, go back there and plant a church. But I fell in love with academia, fell in love with school. I've always enjoyed reading and writing and just enjoyed the books. So to no surprise, I decided to stay and do a doctor of philosophy at Southern Seminary in Louisville in church history. I've always loved history. Grew up in a family that my father read history, has just much read a lot of people who loved and appreciated history. So I developed a keen interest in theology and church history, systematic theology in particular, in church history. And so I got a degree from Southern in historical theology, of course, wrote a dissertation, and I continue to teach. I've been an adjunct professor at Southern and serve in some other places as well, and also do some academic writing. I work for the Andrew Fuller Center for Baptist Studies at Southern Seminary, and I'm a teaching assistant to Michael Haken there. I've been mentored by him and Tom Nettles and many others there. So I have a great love for the academy and love for seminary students, and especially those who are going to go out and take their knowledge into the local church.
Well, and I would say, Jeff, when you combine your age along with your experience, your diverse experience, as well as your deep academic training, by any measure, you would have gone into your first pastorate very well prepared. So describe your first pastorate and what surprised you.
Well, like you said, I went in with credentials that, and this is how our book begins, about your first chapter. I went in with a lot of knowledge, a lot of theological knowledge. I'd been spending every day for the better part of a decade studying the things of God, writing about the things of God. Of course, I'd done a lot of preaching by the time I got to my first pastorate, which was in Alabama, which is where I met you, and had credentials. The credentials on the surface were impressive. You know, they had a PhD that the church I served, they'd not had a pastor previously who'd had a PhD. So obviously they were impressed with this. And so, I think the day that I realized they were impressed with this might've been the beginning of the end for me in many ways, but, the Lord is at work in all this, of course. But I went in with at least surface level, credentials, and it looked like I was going to be able to really, make this church do great things. At least that's what they thought. And again, you read the book, you'll see this in the opening chapter. But I was surprised pretty much immediately. It went a lot differently. The fictional pastorate that I had that had sort of fixed in my mind in seminary was quite different than the pastorate in fact on the ground in Alabama. And the first thing that surprised me was really. And I don't say this in any way to sound hyper pious or anything like that or a false humility, but I was really surprised at the depth of sin that remained unmortified in my own heart. I mean, it became clear rather quickly that there was a stunning level of arrogance and self-love and pride and presumption and entitlement that kind of wrapped itself around my heart, kind of like the kudzu that you see on the side of a country road in Georgia or Alabama. It had wrapped itself around my heart, and a lot of it, I think, had to do with my level of knowledge and the credentials I brought. Because I think I'd kind of bought into this notion that, well, I have advanced degrees in theology and in church ministry. I have some experience, been in church all my life, therefore I'm ready. I'm a pastor. And that just wasn't true. So that's really the first surprise. I think the second surprise was how unresponsive the people would be to my ministry. I don't know why this is so surprising, given the fact that I clearly understand that God must change hearts, that God must do work in building his church and saving sinners. And yet, I was surprised that the response to me was very tepid, lukewarm. I think because of the credentials and the knowledge, I expected a much more profound kind of response. You know, that I would go there, I would show up, I would teach, and that they would think of me much as I had thought of my seminary professors and my own pastor. So I was really surprised that they didn't respond particularly well to my teaching and my preaching, which as I look back, I can see why. And then I think another thing that surprised me was just the intensity of the pain when the sheep bit me. You know, you've heard pastors say, it's almost a pastoral cliche that we serve sheep, sheep stink and they bite, and that's true. And I'm a sheep and I stink and I bite too. But I was surprised at how thin my skin was and how much I would bleed when it happened, when they bit me. Rejection in the form of people leaving the church or working behind the scenes to get me fired, that was deeply personal to me. I kind of thought I could take it. I'd always thought, well, I've got alligator hide. This is not going to bother me when I'm rejected, when people talk about me behind my back. But it did. It hurt. Because it was not only rejection of my teaching and my doctrine, it felt like a complete and utter rejection of me personally. And so I was deeply wounded in a way I would be when I was wounded by a member of my biological family. I mean, it hurt deeply. And that really surprised me, because I really thought I'd just be able to kind of slough it off. But I'm still working through that to some degree. I've had lots of conversations with friends, and they agree that there's just a heightened level of pain that comes with hurt in the ministry. And I think all of us, we love to be loved. I mean, I think Paul assumes this in Ephesians 5 when he tells husbands to, you know, love your wife as you love yourself. Of course, I think he has in view the one flesh union there in a sense. But also there's an assumption that we will love ourselves and want others to affirm us as well. And so all that surprised me, and I think all that surprised me, and there was lots of other things as well, but those are the main things. But I think they surprised me because I had developed a set of unreasonable expectations from both myself, how competent I was, and from my people, how they would respond to me and how they would sort of venerate me and my gifts and my teaching. And it's really only now, from the vantage point of several years of time and prayerful reflection, that I have really have the eyes to see that.
Well, Jeff, thinking about this book and about how seminary prepares and doesn't prepare, I know one of the things that you and I have talked about is that you really loved your time in seminary and spent many years getting more degrees than you thought, as you've been talking about here, but that it was almost like precisely that time, it was like a haven, a shelter of sorts. And then the pastorate was being thrown out there into the wild, but you only realized that in retrospect. That was not how you walked into it. So help us just understand, you know, for current students or maybe some other pastors who can relate to you in this, how that transition works, and perhaps help us to understand specifically there as well. You talk in the book about what Paul Tripp describes as big theological brains and heart disease. Is help talk us through some of that transition of how jumping from one day in seminary in that kind of shire right there into the wilds is pretty difficult for people.
Yeah, I think that's why I laughed when I said I stayed much longer than I originally intended, and I wasn't sure if that was a good thing or a bad thing, because it really became almost a monastic life in many ways. It was like the shire. And, of course, monasteries seemed like a good idea until you put people in them. That's the problem with monasteries. There's people there, and people have sinful hearts. And so that's the problem with monasteries. And so, you know, you begin to think that, again, you build a fictional church. You begin to think this is the way it's going to be. We're going to show up. There's going to be a lecture. The lecture will be perfect. Everyone's gonna like it. They're gonna be deeply interested in these topics, all these things. I mean, they're gonna love the Puritans every bit as much as I do. And they're gonna go on that for us and not come out kind of like I did. Or they're gonna love Spurgeon or Lloyd Jones, or they're gonna love to talk about the hypostatic union and things like that. But out there in the real church world, in the real world, in the place that's not ministerial Disneyland, they're not talking about those things day and night. They're not thinking about those things, really. Now, should they be? Well, I mean, maybe, the Bible and theology, of course, they should. But what happens when I stayed a long time, but it can happen in a short time as well. You do develop what Paul Tripp well called big theological brains, and you picture kind of a big head, like maybe a bobblehead doll you get at a baseball game or something like that. Big theological brains, and then heart disease, these kind of calcified, shriveled up little hearts. And that's when a minister, usually straight out of seminary or currently in seminary, makes his life and his teaching merely a matter of academics. It's when the gospel of Jesus Christ gets reduced to kind of a series of theological propositions, coupled with all the skills necessary to access those ideas. You have the ability to access them and teach them, and you know them, but they become an end unto themselves. And it's when our maturity and usefulness in ministry is defined more by knowing than by being. Of course, the same is true when it becomes defined by doing. That's a different question, but the same, practically the same. But for most younger, kind of reformed-ish leaning evangelicals, which is what comprises the audience for our book, I think, that's not the temptation, the doing part, the overdoing part. I think it's far too easy for many of us, and especially me, to come to love the ideas about God more than to love God and the people of God, the people to whom I'm called to teach. And so when you develop this big theological brain and this small little shriveled up heart, here's what happens. You become equipped with a mental encyclopedia of kind of cut and dried answers to very acute, complex questions that are anything but cut and dried in your church. So real life ministry, when it lands on the ground, requires wise nuance and the application of Bible and theology. I mean, it requires others-focused relational savvy. I didn't have that. I mean, you'll face many challenges for which there are no cut-and-dried answers. Challenges that require careful, patient, wise, as I said, nuanced application of God's Word. I mean, no matter how true and glorious and intellectually satisfying God's Word might be, you must come with more than cut and dried axioms, no matter how glorious they are. And so if you love ideas more than your people, the people whom you serve, they will sense that. You're not going to be able to hide it long. And you've got to earn the right to be heard by those people. If you're a humble, godly leader, they know you're trying to live out the theology you claim to believe, and they know you love them, which is absolutely vital. Then they'll listen to you. They'll listen to those wonderful ideas that populate your mind and are at the core of your preaching and teaching. Just to give it an illustration quickly here. There was a man in my first ministry, and he had been one of the leaders in the church for probably 3 to 4 decades, and he did not like me at all the first few weeks. He didn't like me at all. It was very clear to me. Well, two things were clear, actually. He didn't like me, and that if I was going to get anywhere in the church, I needed to go through him. I had to win him over. I had to win this man over. And he could tell that I was a prima donna. I think that was his, and later he would tell me, I just thought you were a prima donna. And he was right. I was a prima donna. Absolutely right. And so I knew that in order to win a fairly sizable population within my church, I needed to win his heart somehow. And he wasn't mean to me. He didn't do anything sinful toward me. He just didn't like me. He was a bit grumpy toward me always. And I could tell him like my preaching. He just thought it was, a lot of head knowledge. So I started to go to his house. I started to visit him. I started to think about how can I show this man I love him? Well, I want to get to know him. So I began to go to his house and talk to him about Auburn football. He was an Auburn fan. Of course, I'm a Georgia guy. That led to some fun conversations. talked about Alabama too. We talked about NASCAR. Now, I'm not a particularly big NASCAR fan, but I learned you've got to learn to talk to people about things they're interested in. He loved NASCAR. So we talked about NASCAR. I'd covered that as a journalist, and so that helped me on that score. We talked about his family's history in the church. They'd been among the founding members of the church. And I just listened. I got to know them. And we drank sweet tea and sat in the Alabama humidity and on his porch numerous times. And over time, he began to soften toward me and he began to like me. And when I left, I was unfortunately forced to leave due to some mostly circumstances beyond my control. But he, the last day I was there loading my, getting my last load of books, he came and literally fell on me and wept and told me, he said, you know, when you first came here, I didn't think you'd last as long as you've lasted now. But he said, but we've grown to love you. We're going to miss you. This is terrible that you're having to leave like this. And he just told me how much he loved me and appreciated me. He said, you know, and I've listened to your teaching. I think you're a fabulous teacher. He said, I know I've listened because you loved us. And that, I think that may have been perhaps the most valuable lesson I learned on the ground there in ministry. Because it's important that our preaching and teaching be exegetically correct and theologically precise. So that's irreducible. But if we aren't loving our people, living on mission with our people, and suffering with our people, then they're not going to follow us. I mean, John MacArthur said, and I'll never forget this, he said, if you're leading and no one's following, then you're just going for a walk. Colin, it became evident after a while that I was just going for a walk. I mean, all that to say, we just can't be theology geeks. You know, this can't be a hobby for us. That doesn't make you a pastor. I mean, guys who see theology as an end unto itself rather than as a means to an end. We can't unwittingly drag the seminary into the church house and give lectures on the podium rather than preach God's timeless truth and the unction of the Holy Spirit from the pulpit. And as pastors, we must teach our theology to our people and do our theology with our people. And there's a world of difference in those two things.
Well, I know, Jeff, you're now serving again. You continue to work for the Gospel Coalition as a senior editor, working together with me on these books and all number of things for us. We're responsible for our coverage on Bible and theology as well as ministry. So you're shouldering a major load of responsibility at the Gospel Coalition, and you're also serving and regularly leading in a congregation there in Louisville, now back to that town where you spent so many of those formative academic training years. And I know from watching you that you have been able to implement a lot of these lessons, which has made all manner of difference in terms of your own personal integrity, or just your walk with the Lord and your trust and your peace and all that kind of stuff, and certainly in your manner and your demeanor and all that we're talking about here. But I think it's important to note, just in general terms, that the circumstances don't necessarily change. You know, ministry is hard. Wherever you go, even in the best, healthiest congregations, things will be difficult. You know, I'm struck so much by what you described about that first year at your church here in Alabama, and how, I mean, that could happen anywhere, even in wonderful congregations. It's outside of your control in those environments. And I think what we end up seeing is that our lack of sanctification, our lack of holiness, our pride, and things like that can exacerbate those problems, no doubt about it. But it's so important to pursue the Lord in His own leading, for His own glory, for our own good, because we're going to need it in those circumstances that are going to be difficult, whatever our heroes. And I think that's one thing I love about the book is that, and also, Jeff, as you know, the other books that we have coming out, 12 Faithful Men coming up this fall, where we're going to look at all these different heroes from history, from the Apostle Paul all the way through to Charles Spurgeon and others, and see how they all likewise suffered all kinds of different ways, but the Lord was faithful. And the Lord worked in them and He worked through them. All the way to our book that's coming out next year on faithful endurance in ministry. I'm really hopeful that readers are going to be able to see that no matter how gifted, no matter how godly, things are still going to be difficult. That's just part of the deal of what we signed up for. But the Lord is faithful in that process. And I'm inspired, Jeff, by your example, because I see how the Lord was faithful to you even amid the difficulty of your experience here in Alabama, and how He's leading you now there in Louisville. So let's talk a little bit more about the book, about 15 Things Seminary Couldn't Teach Me. Give me an example, Jeff, of a couple chapters that struck you personally as especially encouraging.
I think three or four of the chapters really helped me and have helped me to continue to think through both what God taught me out of the foolishness and the mistakes and my first pastor, and also how he's applying those today, using those now. And one of them was how to shepherd different people, or rather, how to shepherd people different from me, by Jeff Higbee. I mean, hopefully, presumably, you're going to have people in your congregation who are different from you. Hopefully, they're gonna look different than you. None of our churches are monolithic. At least I hope not. But they're going to be different from you. They're going to have different backgrounds. They're going to be you'll probably have people from all different socioeconomic classes and strata, people with different educational levels, different ethnicities. So it's that makes the pastor unique. You've got to be prepared to love those people and meet those people where they are, and to at least be willing to be comfortable around them and to understand them. And so that chapter was incredible. Jeff did a great job, and I think that's going to help a lot of people. Another one was The Time It Takes to Become a Shepherd, which Dale Van Dyke contributed. I had an elder tell me this at the outset of my first church. He said, it's going to take you 5 years to become these people's pastor. But in my arrogance, I didn't believe him, because I thought I was so highly qualified and so highly skilled that they just embraced me immediately, like I said earlier. And that's laughable for me now. I've been at my current church for about 2.5 years, and I'm still becoming their shepherd. I'm still getting to know my elders. We're still building relationships. So I'm not sure I'm their shepherd yet. That does take time. And he does a fantastic job of outlining that and showing how he learned that in his present ministry there. Another one was How to Raise My Kids to Love the Church by Matt McCullough. And this chapter is very personal to me on a couple levels. I mean, one, I've known Matt McCullough since he was 15 years old, so I've watched him grow up in a large pastor's family and then become a pastor himself, and all his siblings love the church. And so that's very, very pertinent. That's encouraging. And also, I'm a father. I'm a father of four children, and I know that there's a danger in being a pastor's child and being in the environment which we're in now for them. And so I'm trying to raise them to love the church, and Matt gives us a lot of help there, telling his own story. Another one, just one more, probably, is The Temptation to Make a Name for Myself, which Scott Sauls wrote. I think I've developed a near allergy to the phrase, build my platform. Because not because I look at other people and say, how dare they build their platform and rob King Jesus of his glory, but because my sinful heart, Colin, is drawn to making much of myself. I mean, it's like an alcoholic being drawn to cheap whiskey, you know? I mean, in my sinfulness, I'm a glory hound. But it's not about me and my glory. It's about God and his glory. I mean, what Paul says in Acts 20:24 is what ministry must be about. He says, but I do not account my life of any value or as precious to myself, if only I may finish my course and the ministry that I received. Now, it's a ministry I received, he says, from the Lord, Jesus, to testify to the gospel of the grace of God. I have to remind myself, that's become kind of a theme verse for me. I have to remind myself of that every day, that he is building his platform. And to do that requires dismantling my platform. And God will build his on the ground where mine once stood. I think that's called humility. And apart from God's heart-transforming, pride-assassinating grace, I'm not humble. So those are some of the highlights, but all the chapters are going to help. They're going to be different, I think, for different ministers.
I have just a couple more minutes talking here with Jeff Robinson about 15 things seminary couldn't teach me. I wanted to know one word here about how this made you feel about seminary. You teach in a seminary. I serve on the advisory board, and I'm recording this message out of Basin Divinity School. I think it can be said clearly, Jeff, we both believe in seminary very strongly. We've given our lives to this to a certain extent, and we can't imagine our ministries, as I said in the introduction, without it. But the message that comes loud and clear here is that the church makes the pastor by God's call, not the seminary. Just about anybody can go to seminary. But the church is the merging of that internal and that external call. Just wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about how you see this book relating to the work that's being done in seminaries.
Well, this book is by no means a critique of seminary education. I mean, of course, Albert Mohler, one of my own, my own seminary president, friend for many years, one of my own ministry heroes, wrote the foreword for this and did it gladly. And as you pointed out, I'm privileged to serve as an adjunct professor in my alma mater and other places. So I think every person preparing for ministry should go to a biblically faithful seminary if they are able. So we want that to be loud and clear. You know, I don't want to become the guys known as you're the two guys who don't like seminary, the 15 reasons. No, it has nothing to do with that. We're very thankful for seminary. I mean, the book didn't change the way I feel about seminary. I love seminary and seminary students because they're future church leaders. But in the same way that basic training doesn't make you a veteran soldier, ready to face the harshest of battles and all the vagaries and the eventualities of battle, seminary is just not enough to make you a pastor or a teacher or a missionary or whatever God has called, whatever ministry God has called you and fitted you for. That comes only over time and through hard-fought experience that includes adversity and affliction. And I think that's our message here. I mean, you've got to earn your stripes in ministry. But they're not the stripes of rank or pay grade, or the stripes that our Savior wore at Calvary. So this book is a complement to seminary. In many ways, it serves as to accentuate your seminary experience, by no means to replace it or to denigrate it. So I think it has heightened my appreciation, if anything, for what I learned in seminary. It made me grateful for it, but also it made me more diligent in telling my students, it may not be the way you think it is. Your ministry may not go the way John Piper's ministry is going, or R.C. Sproul's ministry is going, or Don Carson's ministry is going, or whoever your hero is. It's going to be hard. Those men were used by God only after they were hurt in many ways too. Mm-hmm. And so I think we want them to know that they're going to learn. They're going to have to earn their stripes and their scars in the trenches, and that they will.
Let's close on this note, Jeff. You and I have spent some painfully honest and difficult moments over the years, just working through some of these things. And I know that you and I are very hopeful that through those experiences that we've shared by God's kindness and His providence, that we'll be able to minister to others that same grace that's been extended to us by God. Let's just close on this personal note of help us to understand a little bit about how you've processed this, but just help other pastors listening to this. I would imagine that I hope there's a certain kind of sobriety that's communicated through this podcast and through this book to young men in training for pastoral ministry. But I do hope for those pastors who are listening, who are in the middle of those hardships, that they do find some encouragement through common experience, but ultimately in our common Lord. And so how do you see the sovereignty of God coming into play, Jeff, as pastors? We look back with regret on seasons of ministry, and I would say especially seasons of ministry that were worsened through our own sin.
Yeah, I've given a lot of time to thinking about that, and you have as well. I think I would just want to remind my brother pastors that God is never late. God never gets the wrong address. That season of ministry was not a mistake. And it's a season. It won't be forever. And God is superintending that season of ministry for your good. I mean, during those first few years of ministry, I must have read 2 Corinthians through 100 times. I would encourage pastors to make that the Magna Carta of your ministry. Because Paul, I can't say any better than he does. In terms of what God is teaching us, under the umbrella of His sovereignty, and He's ruling over it all, is in 2 Corinthians 3, in chapter 2, he asks, "Who is sufficient for these things?" And his answer is unforgettable. It's something I go to again and again every day. The Lord gives me to minister the privilege of ministering His gospel. Who is sufficient for these things? He says, "We are not sufficient in ourselves to claim anything as coming from us. But our sufficiency is from God, who made us sufficient or competent to be ministers of a new covenant." God is using these things, even your foolishness. God doesn't waste a thing. He's using it for your good and for His glory and the building of His church. And so that's the takeaway I hope that pastors will receive from this book. and that it will strengthen and encourage them to continue to cling to a sovereign God who's righteous in all his ways and kind in all of his works.
My guest in the Gospel Coalition podcast has been Jeff Robinson, a senior editor of the Gospel Coalition, a good friend and colleague of mine. We hope you'll pick up a copy of 15 Things Seminary Couldn't Teach Me. We hope you'll share it with other pastors laboring alongside you that you're training up. We're just excited to see how the Lord can use this to help bring encouragement and hope and guidance to persevere and to fight on for his glory and the good of the flock that he's entrusted to us. So, Jeff, thanks for your work on this project, and thanks for all of your work at the Gospel Coalition.
My pleasure. Thank you, Colin.
You've been listening to the Gospel Coalition podcast. For more gospel-centered resources, visit thegospelcoalition.org. Support for this podcast comes from listeners like you. Learn more and join us at tgc.org/donate.